कृष्ण कृष्ण हरे 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 राम 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 हरे। हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे राम हरे राम हरे राम राम श्रीमती भक्ति वेदांत स्वामी नीति नाम ने नमस्ते सरस्वती देवे गौरवाचार्य निर्विशेष शून्यवादी श्री श्री राधा श्याम सुंदर की समवेत भक्त बिंदु गौर प्रेमानंदे हरे कृष्णा
हरे कृष्णा।
So it seems that everybody likes to sit in a chair. We could have arranged it. The first day we were actually thinking when we came here, so probably we could have arranged a classroom there, and then everybody could sit in a chair. But I tell you, for health reasons, it's better to sit across the floor. Vedic way of life is healthier life. Western way of life is unhealthy. The system of sitting on a chair is Western. In the Vedic also they would sit on an asana, elevated asana, but they would sit crossly, like I'm sitting. And best is to sit on a lotus posture. Because they say that if you can sit cross-legged for half an hour, you won't have any health problems. So, anyway, a thing to consider. You can consider this. I can see that the ladies are getting physically, they're facing some difficulty. So, again, we go back to consciousness. More conscious we are, more natural life.
I think from youth one learns to sit cross-legged when the bones are already adapted and the whole body starts tightening. I think it's difficult because I started sitting cross-legged and I had my problems. I had two knee operations because I didn't sit cross-legged. You know, the pain was there and I tried.
Cross-legged means in lotus posture?
No, but just cross-legged.
Just cross-legged, no, come on. Because of sitting cross-legged, you had two operations.
Maybe I just said wrong because I didn't learn to do properly.
Or maybe your doctor diagnosed it wrong. Anyway, I mean, if you have difficulties, it's all right. And that's all right. I mean, it's just information. Because that's natural way of sitting. They consider, you know, like if you live in nature, you don't get a chair. You may get some stone, you may get some tree trunk. And so by nature, man is meant to sit. But as you say, like the life has become very artificial and you do get adapted to that. What to do? You know, the world has become in a certain way today and we have to try to change as much as possible. Now it was just an observation. I was just seeing that only two men and third one with a broken leg are sitting on chairs. And this also, Ramdas Prabhu decided to sit on a chair because he saw you are sitting in a chair. He was comfortable on the floor. Okay. So it's actually only one person among the ten. And I know many of you have real difficulties sitting on the floor. Understand. Okay, so yesterday we had a holiday. We're having a real easy time. Like that, what I was supposed to cover on one day, we took 2 days to cover that. The first day one, took 2 days to cover. Day three was a holiday, so our picnic day. And now we are running on a day four. So we have to get into the day two's. Do you all remember what you discussed on the day first? The last point you considered is what? The first point you considered is the difference between matter and spirit. And how do we derive that? That the spirit identity how do we recognize that there is something called spirit? Yeah. But the derivation of that generally comes from common sense. It's a common sense. Like we noticed, like what's going on in the name of science, you know, there's no common sense in it. Maybe there was a pond and certain temperature, ammonia and phosphoric acid and light, heat, electricity, magnetism and sound combined in such a way that a protein block was created, and that evolved further and that evolved into life. Who'll believe that? Will Brinda believe that? Huh? Even Brinda doesn't believe that. How old are you?
Nine.
Okay. Even when Brinda was 5 years old, she didn't believe that. Right? So that is what was going on in the name of science. Advancement of knowledge. Simply based on assumption which hasn't been proven. Like, if, as they say, like when this was presented, this theory was presented, in 1871 by Darwin, in a letter to his friend. And that also he just said, maybe. There was no any definite assertion as such, that in certain temperature and pressure, these elements combined into protein, and then the life evolved in this. There was no such specific description. And now they are calling it scientific knowledge. And so much is going on just on this assumption. But now if we take a common sense consideration, what will be the first common sense consideration? The first common sense consideration will be, like, has anyone combined these elements and evolved life? Answer is no. Like, which was the second part of the statement. There was the observation in 2008. As of 2008, this hasn't been proven. Nowhere in the laboratory, what to speak of life, even protein hasn't been produced. You know, they are talking about protein. Protein is actually lifeless organic element. Lifeless organic element. That also they cannot produce in the laboratory. What to speak of a grain of rice? And that falls on the ground and a rice plant comes out. And in the rice plant there are many rice grains. And each rice grain has a potential to grow into a plant. And in that plant there will be many rice grains with the potential of generating a plant in them. Now who will ever be able to produce like a thing like that in a laboratory? Say for example, in a laboratory there, they are creating robots. Now can they create a robo that will, a male robo and a female robo and give birth to a child robo? Will it ever be possible for anyone of them to create? So then let us face that. What is that causing this wonderful phenomenon to display in the nature? A seed falls on the ground and a tree comes out, and in the tree there are innumerable grains or innumerable seeds. In the tree there are fruits, and in the fruits there are innumerable seeds. And in each seed there is a tree. And in those trees there are innumerable fruits. And in those innumerable fruits there are innumerable seeds. And in those seeds there is a tree. How can they ever produce something like that? So what will be the common sense consideration? That there is something that makes matter function in a non-material way. The tree body, made of matter, but doesn't function like matter. The tree doesn't function, although it is a body made of matter, but it doesn't function like that. It functions in a totally non-material way. And on top of everything, it gives out something called consciousness. Where does it come from? Now the next thing, I mean, after this part you can go with our common sense and intelligence. But then the next consideration is to find a person where we can get those informations. Find a source where you can get those informations from. And what is that source? The source is a spiritual teacher. Somebody who has the knowledge. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur in this respect makes a beautiful point in a poetry called Shadagrahi Vaishnava. He says, man's glory is in common sense, dictating us the grace that man is made to live and love a beauteous heavens, in virtuous heavens. How many of you read Bhaktivinoda Thakur's Shalokrahi Vaishnava? Beautiful poem. Dadurani, do you remember any line? Anyone? Sudevi? The dazzling, deadly liquid. No. Alas for those who spend their days in festive mirth and joy, the dazzling, deadly liquid forms their hearts forever. A shining bottle charm their eyes, draw their hearts in. The slaves of wine can never rise from what we call this good. What a beautiful... And that poetry, I just read that one poem and you'll understand it. Ramananda, the standard in the class is never be late. Okay? Not only in this class, when you go to any class, don't be late. Unless there is something very, very precious. I give an example, when you go to a movie theater, you would rather be there 15 minutes early. And sometimes when I make the seminar, when I arrange a seminar, I follow a policy. The gates will be open, the door will be remain open only until 5 minutes after that time. Close when you are engaged. Because this thing is business, isn't it? If you just miss 5 minutes, maybe at the 5 minutes we are just giving the essence of the whole class. You miss that. You miss what the classes are meant about, what the class is meant for. So, like today, first 5 minutes or so. So here, Bhaktivinoda Thakur is saying, man's glory is in common sense. What is common sense? What's the definition of common sense? Body? If okay, reason. Reason. Simple word, yes. Self-evident truth. Okay, very good. Common sense actually is intelligent perception, not even conclusion, isn't it? All of you have said the same thing. So it's an intelligent perception to come to a conclusion. Like for example, you see that in Europe, the snow melts in spring. So what will be the common sense? Every year, as the spring comes, the snow begins to melt. Then comes spring. And in spring, the flowers bloom. Now, we don't really need to make an elaborate research on that. This is just an intelligent perception. And that is what is common sense. Common sense is, if I put my hand in fire, it will get burnt. Therefore, don't put your hand in fire. Now, a person who doesn't have intelligence will not be able to come to this conclusion. Right? So it's an intelligent perception that leads to certain conclusion. So what is, now let us consider, what is a common sense observation? What is the intelligent perception when we see things? We see that somebody who is alive for so many years, all of a sudden, he dies. Right? And when he dies, what happens? When he dies, he doesn't talk, he doesn't walk. The things that he used to do all this while, all, that he used to do before, stops doing that. Now he doesn't talk, he doesn't walk, he doesn't eat, he doesn't breathe. Everything stops. And a closer analysis also will say that every single function of the organs of his body stops at that. Now what causes for someone to stop every single activity all of a sudden? What will be the common sense observation? Don't we say when someone dies, don't we say that he left? He left. So when you say he left, who left? The body is there. Body is lying there. Then who left? The one who left, obviously he is not the body. Rather, the one who left caused the body to stop functioning the way it was doing. So, common sense conclusion is that that thing, that as long as it was in the body was alive, the moment it leaves the body becomes dead. Is it clear? So these are just the common sense considerations. We don't have to be a big scholar or a big scientist to understand that. And mind you, when I You know, like when you are preaching, you know, preach by appealing to people's common sense. Don't try to be too scholarly or just appeal to their common sense. Like, what's the difference between a dead body and a living body? Let him think. What's the difference between a dead body and a living body? When you think of it, doesn't it come immediately to your mind? What's the difference? The dead body is dead. It's not alive anymore. Now the consideration is, do you want to know why? Do you want to know why? Why a body becomes dead all of a sudden? Because the soul leaves the body. Then you provide the information. The soul left the body. Now whether you will accept the soul's existence or not, it is up to you. But an interesting thing is that in the past, practically everybody accepted the existence of soul. Consider any religion, whether it is Hinduism, Christianity, Islam or Judaism. Did they believe in soul? Everyone believed in soul. So that means, actually it makes it clear that all the religions are speaking about the soul and giving more information about the soul and information about God and soul. People were more religious than they are today. And that means those days everyone believed in soul, existence of soul. What kind of information they had about the soul, that is another thing. Like as I was telling you the other day, like one devotee, he was getting married. He was coming from a Jewish background. So when he told his mother that he is planning to marry a certain girl, the mother asked, is she Jewish? Then he said, Mom, she's a spirit soul. The mother says, yes, but is she a Jewish spirit soul? So, whether they had a clear understanding about the soul or not, but they accepted the soul. Like I notice when I speak to the Christians, very learned, very kind of materially very successful people, quite considered to be quite learned. Like I'll give you an example. One day I was talking to the grandfather of one of our devotees, and he was a judge. High court judge, and in course of our discussion I just couldn't make him understand that the animals have a soul. I just couldn't make, and what to speak of when I told him even the trees and plants have soul. It blew his mind. But the reality is that he doesn't know what a soul is. Because he doesn't know what a soul is, he is made to understand that only human beings have souls. Anyway, the Christians at least believe that the human beings have souls. You know, what about the Muslim belief? They think only the men have souls. So, ultimately what it is, they don't know what a soul is. But the reality is that when we understand what consciousness is, then it becomes clear. What is the difference between dead matter and a living being? What is the difference? Simple understanding says the difference is the consciousness. One is conscious, the other is not conscious. Why do we say that a tree is alive? A tree is a living entity. Why do we say that? Because we can distinctly see that the tree has consciousness. So the understanding is, wherever there is consciousness, there is a tree. Now in that light, let us consider the difference between a dead body and a living body. The living body is conscious, dead body is unconscious, inert. Now it leads us to another consideration. Where does consciousness come from? And the answer is from the soul. And now, if we want information, what should we do? What is knowledge actually? Knowledge. What is knowledge? Rupanuga, you are a very knowledgeable person. What is knowledge? That knowledge is actually accurate collection of information. To receive information is knowledge, right?
And information.
That is it. Information is knowledge. You know that there is a place called Zurich in Switzerland. When you have the information, you have knowledge, you have the knowledge. When you don't have the information, you are in ignorance. Right? Those who know something, that means know means having the information. Now here, the soul is a thing. Soul is a substance. Right? And if we want to know about the soul, what do we have to do? What do we have to do? We have to get the information. Now where do you get the information from? From a source that has the information. Now in this respect, there are two sources for information. The person who has the knowledge, or the book that carries the knowledge. Now if we want to know about the soul, there are books that give information about the soul. And there are persons who has the knowledge about the soul. O Sharagrahi, again Bhaktivinod Thakur. O Sharagrahi Vaishnava soul, thou art an angel fair. Lead me on to Vrindavan and spirit's power declare. So who is the person who has the information? Sharagrahi Vaishnava. What is the meaning of Sharagrahi? Shar means essence. And Grahi means accept or acknowledge. Now, do you know that sometimes a Vaishnava is compared to a swan? Why is a Vaishnava compared to a swan? Yes, Arjuna? Yeah, a swan has the ability to extract milk from a mixture of milk and water. It can separate the water and collect the milk. So similarly, Vaishnava is a person who can discriminate between matter and spirit and collect the spirit and reject the matter. Therefore, a Vaishnava is considered to be not only a swan or a hamsa, but he is considered to be Paramahamsa, a great swan-like person. Or Sharagrahi, Sharagrahi, like a swan, you can extract the essence from a mixture and reject what is undesirable. Thou art an angel fair. Lead me on to Vrindavan and spirit's power. So man's glory is in common sense, dictating us the grace. The grace dictating us the divine grace of the spiritual family. So that is how, if we want the information, we have to go to the source of information, spiritual master. And the spiritual master, when you go to a teacher, how does a teacher teach? The teacher teaches on the basis of the books. When you go to school, the teacher teaches us. How? On the basis of the books. When you go to the college, we study, the teacher teaches on the basis of the books. In the university, the same. So on the basis of the books, the information are given or teaching that. So the books that have, the books that contain the information of the spiritual reality are called scriptures. Now, the scriptures are actually sacred. Every religion has their scripture. And all these scriptures are held with high esteem because they are sacred. Sacred means they will never challenge, they will never question the authenticity of the information there. For the Muslims, they have the Quran. And every Muslim person will accept Quran to be the absolute truth. Everything that has been presented in the Quran, yes. Similarly, the Christians have their Bible. They will accept their Bible as the absolute. Whatever is present in the Bible, they won't question. The Jews have their Torah or Helmut, and they accept that as the absolute truth. So this is how the scriptures are considered to be sacred and is held with highest esteem. But unfortunately, I'm sad to say, when it comes to Hindus, they don't have scriptures, they have mythology. And that's the most unfortunate thing, that the scriptures that have the most profound information about the spiritual reality Unfortunately, today's Hindus are not accepting them to be sacred or authentic or authoritative. To them, it is mythology. Srimad Bhagavatam is mythology. Mahabharata is mythology. So Bhagavad Gita is in Mahabharata. So if Mahabharata is mythology, what is Bhagavad Gita? It's a part of mythology, therefore mythology. Now what is the word, what is the meaning of the word myth? You know, in Sanskrit, there's, it just occurred to me, in Sanskrit, there's an expression, mithya. Mitha means lie, untruth. So myth also means non-real. So that means we are actually rejecting our scriptures as non-real. It's just fairy tales, some stories, nothing more than that. Fortunately, Srila Prabhupada came and gave us the light. It is because of Srila Prabhupada we really found out what our scriptures are and what an amazing storehouse of information our scriptures are. Otherwise, if you were just the Hindus, we would have missed out this opportunity. We would have thought that these are all mythologies and we have never bothered to read them. And even if we read them as a, just as people read Macbeth or Midsummer Night's Dream. So the point here is that recognize that the Vedic scriptures contain the most profound spiritual information. And the proof is, the intelligent class of people all over the world are accepting it. Whether today's India is accepting it or not, it doesn't matter. But people all over the world, intelligent class of people, thoughtful people, concerned people, are accepting it. So that is the importance of scriptures. When it comes to scripture, we have to accept it as it is. We can't question. Now the thing is that, does it mean that it's a blind faith? No, it shouldn't be blind faith. Again, use your common sense. Use your intelligence. Does it look like a fairy tale? Does it sound like a fairy tale? Dehi nashmin yatha dehe kumaram jovanam jara tatha dehantara prapti thiras tatsana. Does it sound like a fairy tale? Just as the body grows from childhood to youth to old age. And in spite of the change of the body, the owner of the body, the person who owns the body, remains the same. He doesn't change. Similarly, when one will die, beyond death, he will transmigrate into another body. Is it science or fairy tale? Your body has been changing. Did you change? So in spite of your change of body, you don't change. That means your existence is transcendental to the body. Your existence is beyond the consideration of the body. So, after you leave the body, you will continue to exist. Does it need a lot of art, a lot of intelligence to understand that? A lot of scholars? Yeah, it needs some intelligence to understand that. But it doesn't need a whole lot of scientific research to understand that. In spite of the change of the body, I did not change. So even when I don't have the body, I will continue to exist. Because my existence is not relative to the body. So in this way we can see whatever has been informed in the Vedas are the truth and the absolute truth. And we can also consider the eligibility of those persons. Who are the people? Right in front of us we saw one person. At least some of us are fortunate to see the person. That's Srila Prabhupada. The most brilliant person, at least in my life, I have seen that Prabhupada was the most brilliant person. Most brilliant person. Prabhupada would take, people would come to attack Srila Prabhupada. And Prabhupada so easily defeat them. I mean, it's something like a champion boxer is dealing with an amateur. Does he need any struggle? Does he need to struggle? You just slap him. That's how Prabhupada was dealing with all those big scholars and social leaders and people. Such. And then in his personal life, such a wonderful person. So complex, so caring, so compassionate, so loving. Now, the immediate consideration comes, or immediate question that comes to mind, why should Prabhupada tell a lie? why a person of that stature give us some lives? And the person who has made such a sacrifice, the person who has achieved so much, why should he lie? What does he have to gain from me? Prabhupada didn't want anything from us. Prabhupada didn't care. It's not that people didn't give things to Prabhupada. But I used to see, Prabhupada was totally unaffected. A person would come, give Prabhupada thousands of dollars. Prabhupada just hand it over to his secretary. And treat that person just like anybody else. Not that because he gave him so much money, he is special. He treated him just like anybody else. So what does it show? It shows that Prabhupada had nothing to gain from us. We may have thought, oh, I give so much money to Prabhupada, but it didn't mean anything to Srila Prabhupada. Because Prabhupada has Krishna. And when one has Krishna, what does it mean to anything? Now, why should a person like him lie? That's the first consideration. Again, common sense consideration. Why should he lie? And the second consideration is that whatever Prabhupada said, we can see that they are experimentally verified. Whatever Prabhupada said was completely proven to be correct. Like just as, and what was Prabhupada giving? Prabhupada was presenting the scriptural information. The information that are there in the scriptures. Now, Prabhupada came and told us, you are not this body, you are a spirit soul. And then in Bhagavad Gita, we found Dehinashtha. Na jayate mriyate vaparacha. Jirnani vashamshu dhavyaya. All these statements of Bhagavad Gita is proving Srila Prabhupada's point. We are not this body. We are spirit souls. We are spirit souls. And these informations are, like Prabhupada, as a teacher, gave the informations from the authority of the books. The basic scripture. And so now our consideration is why should Prabhupada lie? Then next thing is we see another personality, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, Bhakti Vinod Thakur, Gaur Kishore Das Babaji, Vishwanath Chakravarti, Kavindandan Babaji, Rupa Goswami, Sanatan Goswami, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and ultimately Krishna. Why Krishna will lie? Why Krishna can give us some information that's not real? Therefore the intelligent thing is to accept what Krishna said. Just accept. Whether you can understand it or not, doesn't matter. Just accept it because Krishna has said it. And the thing is, in course of time, it will be proven that it is true. Like the way the spiritual master guides, how does he guide actually? His spiritual master doesn't say that I'll give you eyes. Spiritual master says that I will open your eyes. The faculty is there. It is there. But it's a matter of opening our eyes. He says that why your eyes are closed and you are deprived of seeing the beautiful world around you. Just open your eyes. And he's teaching us that this is the way you can open your eyes. Om Agyana Timirandhasya Gyananjana Shalaka. That's what the spiritual master does. He opens our eyes. And then we see. We don't have to ask him, oh, did you open my eyes? Is it open now? No. The proof is that, yes, eyes are open and I'm seeing. It's we who are seeing. And this is how the process becomes established as correct. So in this way, we have been exposed to the spiritual. Now for this information, to receive this information, we came across two considerations, the teacher and the book. The books are the scriptures and the teachers are the spiritual masters. Now what's the qualification of a teacher? So when you go to an university to study certain subjects, what is a natural understanding? The person who is teaching is qualified. He is a master in a subject, or maybe he has specialized in a subject. He has a PhD in a subject. He is a doctorate. So that way, he becomes an authority. Authority means he has the information. If you want to study medicine, here is a person who has all the information about that science. And therefore, he can teach you. Now similarly, when it comes to spiritual knowledge, We have to go to a teacher who is known as spiritual master. So what's the qualification of a spiritual master? What's the qualification of a spiritual master? Does he have to be 6'4"? Does he have to have long hair? Does he have to have the golden complexion? Does he have to look like an angel? What's the qualification of a spiritual master? Yeah, in simple words? Yeah, good. These are the most important considerations. He has the knowledge and he acts according to that understanding. These are the two qualifications. Therefore, he is called an acharya. Acharya means he teaches by example. So that's the qualification of a bona fide teacher. Yeah, Vina, you also had a question. You also had something. Very good. He must come through a bona fide line. That means he must be a student of a qualified teacher. In order to become a qualified teacher, one has to be the student of a qualified teacher. Any other points of yes? Okay. So what does it mean?
Those who are interested in that, in the good master,
Tasmat Gurum, Prapadeta, Jigyashu. This is more of a qualification of a student. Yes?
Ganivas Tatvadarshinaha.
Ganina Tatvadarshinaha. Yeah, very good. He is Ganina, he has the knowledge. And not only he has the knowledge theoretically, but Tatvadarshinaha, he has seen the truth. Yes, Malati?
The psychology
of that, he has to be able to teach. Okay. He should be able to teach. He should not only have the knowledge, but he should be able to teach also. Otherwise, he can't be a teacher. Right? Good. Yes?
He speaks always about Krishna.
Huh?
He speaks always about Krishna.
He speaks always about Krishna. Very good point. Jai Krishna Tattva Vitya, Shai Guru Hari. One who knows Krishna, He can become a spiritual. Okay, he's enthusiastic about the subject he's teaching. Priya has a very nice point. And yes, Ashwarani. Okay, very good point. Very good point. What is the verse? Pacha Vega, Manaso, Krodha Vega, Jubha Vega, Udara Vega, Upastha Vega, Udar Upastha Vega. Etan Vegan Javishaheta Dhira Sarvam Uphimam Shikritirishya. Who has controlled the urge of his tongue, urge of his mind, Manasa Vega, Jubha Vega, tongue, Udara Vega, belly, genitals. One who has been able to control those urges, he can teach the science of Krishna consciousness. Yes, Ramdas.
Maharaj, it is very nicely described in the Samsara prayers.
Okay, like? Okay, very good point Ramdas Prabhu brought up. He said the Samsara prayer has very beautifully described that. Okay, so let us go through the Samsara prayer. What's the first verse? Samsara Dava Nalalina Loka. Okay, so what's the first qualification of a spiritual master? He should be able to extinguish our suffering condition. He must be able to relieve us from our suffering condition. Sansara. Then, Mahaprabhu Kirtana Nitya Gita. So the second consideration is he is engaged in Mahaprabhu Sankirtan. Right? He is ecstatically engaged in that movement and he is able to engage others also in that Sankirtan. Then the third consideration, Sri Vigrahara Dhananitya Nana. Okay. So he can engage us very nicely in deity worship in the temple. Right. Then the fourth. Mm-hmm. So what's the fourth qualification? That he can provide all kinds of nice prasad. Okay, that's a big qualification. Then the fifth? Okay, so he is always absorbed in Radha Krishna's transcendental pastime. In this way, he is completely absorbed in Krishna consciousness. The sixth. So that means he is very expert in understanding Krishna's inner mood of Krishna's internal mood, and in this way he is serving Radha and Krishna in their very very intimate. Then the seventh. So that personality should be considered as good as the Supreme Godhead, because he is very very dear to Krishna. So the way to win Krishna's favor is by winning the favor of someone who is very dear to him. And then the last one. By his mercy only we can make spiritual advancement, and by his mercy only we can receive the mercy. And if we miss out on his mercy, then there is no. Yes, so these are the qualifications, one of five. The main point is, he knows Krishna, he acts according to that understanding. That means he knows Krishna and he is a devotee of Krishna. And he is engaged in devotional service of Krishna, and therefore he can engage others also in devotional service. And in this way he can give Krishna, he can offer. So these are some qualifications of the spiritual. Now the next consideration is, what are the qualifications of a disciple? Okay, okay, meaning? Okay, so the qualification of a disciple, the first qualification of a disciple is that he must be submissive. Must be submissive. When he accepts a spiritual master, he must submit himself to this. So, and then he must be sincere about his spiritual inquiry for Krishna. He must be eager to understand the spiritual nature. And he must be engaged in serving Krishna through the spiritual master. And this is how he wins the favor of the spiritual master. Like these are, main point is, a student has to be a student. Right? When one is a student, what does he do? What does he need? He has to be very disciplined. That's why student life demands brahmachari. Right? That means, when one is serious about his studies, he can't allow himself to be diversified in heart. He must focus. Your brahmachari means focus. Krishna, spiritual subject matter, and no more attachment for him. No more, no interest for him. Like Priya, you are in the university now. What's expected out of you? Can you go to the modules just as you want? What is expected? You must attend the classes, and you must do your homework, prepare yourself. Is there any time for anything else? Very little time for anything. But if you want to excel in your subject, what do you need to do? To be completely focused. So that is what is expected of a student. Student must be committed to the subject he studies. Student must be submissive to the teacher. The student must be humble. The student must be seriously interested about the spiritual world. I want to know about the spiritual. I want to know that subject. I want to make advancement. And the bottom line is that a student must be surrendered. In this respect, at the beginning of Mahabharata, there is a very beautiful story. The story of Upamanyu. There was a rishi called Dhamma. Dhamma is actually the Kula Guru of the Pandavas, Dhamma Rishi. Dhamma had a student called Upamanyu. And so one day Dhamma told Upamanyu, if you go, he got the news that the wall of the paddy field has broken and the flood water is coming. So it will flood the water, flood the field. Actually, in India, I don't know here, where there is a lot of water, the rice field needs water. Rice plant has a characteristic that when there is water, it rises above water. No matter how high the water is, the plant will go above water. So in order to rise paddy, to grow, they put water in that. If they the field gets submerged, so that the rice plants will quickly grow. And this water is held within the field by making them about 6 to 9 inches high. And now he got the news that that wall broke and the water is running out. So he went and the teacher told Dhamma, told Upamanyu, you go and repair that so the water doesn't flow. He thought that really it's just a little break, you will go on. But the thing is, the water was rushing out in such a, or maybe rushing in, the flood water was rushing in such a way that he could not repair the wall. So what Upamanyu did, he laid down and with his body he created the wall so that the water could go out. So the day went by, in the evening, all the disciples got together, gathered around the Guru. And then Dhamma Rishi noticed that Upamanyu was missing. So he asked, where is Upamanyu? So then the students reminded him that he sent Upamanyu to the field and he came to come back. So it was night already. So Dhamma went to the house and it was dark. So he called out, where is Upamanyu? Upamanyu, where are you? And Upamanyu said, my Lord, my spiritual master, lying here. He explained what he was doing. The teacher became so impressed with him that he went and told him to get up. And he blessed him. Let all four Vedas be revealed in your heart. He just wished, and it happened. So that's why we also sing our Gurvashtakam. That's another song that you could have considered. Yashya Prasha, Dibbo Gyan, Vida Prakashya. Prema Bhakti Jaha Vete, Avita Vinashya, Vede Gaya Jaha. So Dibbo Gyan, Vida Prakashya. By the mercy of the spiritual master, the transcendental knowledge is revealed in the heart. Now here we can see, like Upamanyu did not have to go through extensive studies and memorizing. And the spiritual master said, let the four Vedas be revealed in your heart. And it happened. So it's a very important anecdote at the beginning of Mahabharata. So that you can understand the guru-disciple relationship and how, by the mercy of the guru, the spiritual knowledge is actually. So here, what do we find? A special characteristic of Upamanyu. Surrender. Now again we go back to that same Gurvashtaka, Guru Vandana. Guru Mukha Padma Bhaktiya, Chittete Kariya Vaikya, Arna Kuriya. So just accept the words of the spiritual master and act upon it. And the rest will happen. How it will happen, that we will see ourselves when it happens. So these are the qualifications. So it is very important that we become good disciples. Why did Srila Prabhupada receive the mercy of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur of this world? Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur had many, many exalted those who are with him all the time, exalted sannyasis. But Prabhupada actually made Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati three times. But Prabhupada, we can see, Prabhupada became the carrier of Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur's line. Why? So it is the surrender that makes us a recipient of the mercy of the spiritual. Does anybody have any question? So I'll give you the printout today. Did you have the workshop yesterday? Not yesterday, no. Before. So what do we do? Seems that unless I force you, you are not sharing the workshop. Okay, so anyway, main thing is that whatever you are gathering, whatever you are collecting, please try to retain it. Try to understand the subject. Otherwise, what is the Kali Yuga tendency? It enters from one ear and goes out. But it should be, it should enter from both ears and just stay inside. Alright? And better still is here. When you receive the knowledge in the heart, that's the deal. We do retain in the head, but that is not the real. Realization, this is understanding. Head gives us understanding. Heart gives us realization. To realize this. Okay, thank you all very much. All glories to Shri Prabhupada.